Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength Conditioning Podcast. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
How's it going, everyone? Hope you're enjoying this rainy summer. Right now, as we are starting the podcast, it's now Wednesday at 1:40. It's absolutely gorgeous outside, so hopefully you guys are out getting some sunshine, and hopefully we have another good podcast for you today. Adam, how's everything been? I know you took off last week. Hopefully you got some downtime to work on life.
Yeah, took off some time last week. We got a trip coming up next week, so we'll be away a little bit. Some time to unplug, I'm really looking forward to. So it's been good.
Good. Yeah, I've had some downtime too. As I was just telling you, I went and got a massage right before this. And so if I sound out of it today, that's why. I'm just very relaxed. It was actually a two-hour massage. That was a nice treat to myself. If anyone's interested, it's Patty Meyer at Body Shifts Massage Therapy and Body Work in Concord. Fantastic job. So I'll probably be a little more mellow today than usual. Can't promise there'll be too many swears, but we never know which way the wind's going to blow. So,
well, luckily today's topic shouldn't be anything that gets us too
Yeah, we shouldn't
upset.
Get riled up about that.
The only thing I can think about is if we start talking about like what you can't do anymore or anything like that. Well, but
I figure that'll come up. Oh, yeah, my surgeon said don't do this.
Right, yeah.
So we'll work through that. But today we're going to be talking about power and explosiveness training for the aging athlete. Now, when we talk about the aging athlete, we're not necessarily referring to just what we think of as old people. You know, 30 to 40 year olds could be in this classification, you know, 50 to 70. And the training will change, you know, depending on injury history, activity, and lifestyle. So just remember, this is a spectrum that we're going to be going over today. But power and explosiveness is important because it's something that we tend to lose as we age. So a lot of us are familiar with sarcopenia, which is age-related muscle loss. And that's true for all of us. So what we're trying to do is slow things down. And then we also lose the connection between the nervous system and the muscle firing. So we can do things to slow that down. Now, Adam, question for you. When you're designing programs for people 40 plus, mm-hmm. We'll just use 40 as kind of our cutoff. What emphasis do you put on power and explosiveness?
Depending on the person, but there's always some amount of it in there somewhere. How I do it could differ from person to person. For my, you know, more consistently moving, more, you know, they do more recreational athletic type activities, you know, they play pickleball, or they still play in a pickup basketball league, or they still, you know, those people I'm probably adding it a little bit more in. Mm-hmm. You know, something where I'm like trying to get a specific power exercise on like every single day they train. Whereas usually some of the other, my other clients who are just, it's just like general health and wellness and making sure that they maintain some of that. It may only be like two or three times a week.
Yeah.
You know, but there's always some measure of it no matter what.
Yeah, and we'll get into the specifics of what those exercises look like. Now, you brought up a great point about the recreational exercises, because far too often, especially males, because I think males are just, to put it nicely, idiots when it comes to these activities.
Stupid
idiots. All right, we're on the same page. But how often do you hear people say, oh, you know, during the wintertime I play a pickup basketball league? Okay, what else do you do? That's it. Okay, what do you do for a warm-up? I play basketball.
I lace up my sneaks.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Or you get the person, oh, I play softball. Okay, cool. How'd you get injured? Well, I was sprinting first base. Okay, how often do you sprint? Never. All right, this was a disaster waiting to happen. Now, and I've mentioned this before on the show, tendon ruptures happen more after the age of 40, between 40 and 60. Yeah, it's the highest rate of tendon ruptures. And again, it's mostly males compared to females, because again, I think men are willing to do more stupid things than females. If someone trained for the activity that they were going to do, so let's say basketball, mm-hmm. and we were able to implement power and explosive exercises, what percentage, and I don't need the science to be exact about this, just in your mind, in your experience, what percentage of those individuals that get injured how much could we reduce their injury risk by just by training power and explosiveness?
I mean, shit, I would think it's like 60-70%.
I would say greater than 50.
Okay,
absolutely. I don't know what number it would be, but I would say their injury risk would be significantly lower. I mean, anything that we do when we look at the risk of injury, you know, even when accounting for everything, no matter how good you are at reducing risk, there's still always going to be a 10% chance that something is always going to happen. So even then, you know, greater than 50%, I would love that. To not have a torn Achilles, to not have a blown out quad tendon, to not rip your rotator cuff because you threw a softball too hard. Like, these are the things we should be doing. And we've also talked about other benefits to power and explosiveness exercises based off of if someone has osteoporosis and why they should in fact be jumping, and I'm sure we'll go down that path again, but now everyone can probably understand what we mean by explosiveness, but could you just kind of define what power is and why it's important?
Power is moving at basically maximal velocity, which just means that you're moving as fast as possible for a short period of time. So, like, a jump is power. You know, assuming that you're trying to, how much power you get into it is going to depend, but a jump is maximal power. So, like, for example, when they're testing power, they do a vertical jump test. You try and jump up as high as you possibly can with one effort. I mean, they do multiple trials when they're testing a vertical jump, but the goal is to jump as high as you possibly can with one jump.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing a baseball, assuming that you're trying to throw it as hard as you can, is a maximal power exercise.
Yep.
Sprinting, like a full-out sprint, is a maximal power exercise. Anything where you're trying to up the velocity from zero to as high as you can get it quickly is considered power.
And I'd even say, so think about the number of individuals that mountain bike this time of year. Now, granted, they'll ride up to speed down, which I think is a crazy sport. But if you're going up an incline, and I'd even say hiking for this matter, is still a power exercise. Strength alone is not going to do it for you if you can't express it quickly. Because try going uphill pedaling slow.
Yeah,
you're not going to go anywhere, or you're going to fall backwards. So I'd even say, you know, you need power to be expressed. And this all goes back to the type of training that you're doing. You know, we've talked about before the different metabolic systems. So we can break it down to the ATP system, where it's 15 seconds worth of max effort, and then glycolytic, which will be up to 2 minutes, whatever they say it is now. And then oxidative, which is going to be more 2 minutes plus, and that's going to be more of our endurance-based exercises.
Our fat-burning zone.
Exactly.
Sorry.
That's what most people still think.
Yeah.
Now, with regards to sarcopenia, as adults age, do they tend to go more endurance-based sports, or do they tend to go power-based sports?
They tend to go more endurance-based sports.
Correct. And if we just look at someone's tissue fiber makeup, so we have our different types of tissue fibers. So we have the type 1, type 2A, and 2B. We tend to lose the 2B first, or the what they waste, they get smaller, followed by 2A, and then generally we have our endurance-based fiber types sticking around. And that's why we see that transition. That's also why we see people lose weight as they get older, because they're literally shrinking. Those fibers are no longer being used. But we can offset that just by adding in a couple days, 3 days worth of power and explosiveness. Now, just because we say those things doesn't mean it always has to be jumping. But let's make this clear. If you have the ability to jump, you should be doing it. Would you agree?
Completely. 100%.
I had, there was a older PT who's been in the field forever, Burdenko. Does that water base, but he does a lot of land based stuff too.
Love
and
stuff.
He basically said people get old because they stop jumping. And at the time, it was like, I have no idea what he means by that. However, he said it, so I believed it. And now, the older I get, and the more people I meet, I believe it. So they should be jumping. So again, if you currently can't jump and you want to get back to jumping, there should be strategies to get you there. If you're perfectly fine but you think you're old and you shouldn't be jumping, being old is no excuse. I mean, it's an excuse for a lot of people, but it's not a good one. We need to keep jumping, you know, even running. Or at least my philosophy is, as long as you still have the ability to do something, do it. Or at least be working towards it to always better yourself. Now, what are some examples of power exercises that we would just give an athlete, a younger athlete?
A younger athlete? So, you want me to go like power cleans, that kind of thing?
Okay, whatever you can think of, just so throw it out there.
Power cleans are a big one. Power cleans, dumbbell or trap bar squat jumps done correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, box jumps can be one too, because you're expressing power, but you don't have to worry about the landing phase with all the extra speed. Mm-hmm. Kettlebell swings. Let's see, what are some long jumps, high jumps, all that kind of stuff. Sprints.
Correct. So, one of the commonalities between all of the exercises that you just mentioned are that what they would call the triple extension.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting plantar flexion from the hips, knee extension, hip extension. Now, are all of those exercises needed for the aging athlete?
Yeah. Or at least some function of the same movement. Maybe not those exact exercises, but the movement itself.
Exactly. Yes. So there's no reason why we can't create the ankle movement, the knee movement, and the hip movement. And really that's the goal of today, is to reiterate that yes, you can do these exercises, and chances are you're doing some form of them. We just need to add speed to it. And again, that can help you with balance and reactive agility, and it can actually enhance your strength as well, which a lot of people don't think of, but it allows us to then recruit more muscle fibers, which then is really, that's what strength is, the ability to recruit more muscle fibers with one given stimulus. So again, too many benefits to be doing these things. However, I just feel a lot of people don't know where to begin, you know, and you know, you can probably speak better on this than I can. I feel like Get Fit in general does a pretty good job with their power and explosive exercises, because there's a lot of older or aging athletes that work out there. And then there's other gyms that don't do it because, oh, nope, they're older. We can't be doing that stuff. That's going to hurt X, Y, and Z. There needs to be a fine line between the two. Now, let's just say you're someone who has knee discomfort and you don't like jumping, but you can do stationary exercises. Feet can stay fixed to the ground. Adam, what are some examples of power exercises or speed-based exercises that they can do with their feet fixed to the ground?
I mean, you can just do strength exercises quickly. You can do a goblet squat, but you come up fast.
So can you go back to the speed or strength exercise done quickly?
Yeah. Because
that's where I was hoping you would go first. So just give an example of that.
So, for example, like a goblet squat, so holding the weight in the goblet position, you go down at your normal pace, and then you try and explode up to standing. You can do the same thing with deadlifts. No, you said knees. I'm sorry. So
that's all right.
Yeah.
So deadlifts would still be a pattern that you can just, it's a strength exercise, but now you're just adding speed to it.
Right.
Now, if someone were to do this, do you recommend that they use the same weight that they would if it were a strength exercise? So no speed, but would you expect them to use the same weight?
No. It needs to be lighter.
Yeah.
If they want to develop true power, it has to be heavy enough that you have to create the force to exert against it to move quickly to develop the power. But it can't be so heavy that it actively slows you down, because then it tips the scales from power to strength.
Correct. And I think that's a great way to describe it. And a lot of people blur the lines a little too much. Now, if someone were an Olympic weightlifter and they were going to the Olympics, all right, there's a blurred line between the two, because some of them can lift pretty freaking heavy weight. So there needs to be a combination of strength and speed. But overall, you know, I recommend, you know, kind of 40 to 50% of your one rep max. And again, for those who don't know how to figure it out, just pick a weight that you can do for X number of reps. There are online calculators that you can go on to and just type in one rep maximum calculators. And it will be able to tell you kind of where you need to be, and it will figure out the percentages for you. But the speed squat is really a great place for people to start. Speed deadlift is a great place. I even go as far as a speed push-up. So mm-hmm. now it's upper body based. So having someone lower themselves down to the ground in a controlled manner and then push the ground away from you as fast as you can. Now, a lot of people have seen a variation of this before, the clapping push-up. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't really have anything against it as long as the person that can do it can, you know, has the ability to do it safely.
Yeah.
Do I think it's necessary? Not really, but I guess I don't really have a whole ton against it as long as the person can do it safely. But again, do I think it's 100% necessary to actually... I mean, it's like a box jump in a certain way that it's just a feedback mechanism to make you push as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have to worry about clapping your hands and getting them back down to the floor before your face smashes off it, then you're probably not... No, I shouldn't say probably. Then you might not push as fast as you could. You know, so like you in that way it's helpful because it's like in your mind you're thinking, okay, I have to get going as fast as I possibly can. I have to get as far off the ground as I can because I have to be able to get my hands back in time. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very painful. In that way, I suppose it's helpful, but I don't think it's necessary if you're just, you know, focusing on the point of the exercise, which is just getting up as fast as you can.
Yeah. My only concern with the clapping push-up is when they come back and land on their wrists.
Yeah.
And I think that can cause a lot of problems. But I like how you pointed out the box jump, because I'll put 25-pound plates, and then the goal is just push up and put your hands on top of the mm-hmm. plates.
Yep.
So it's less of a distance that they have to travel, plus similar to the box jump where we talk about how it's pretty safe because you're bringing the ground to them. Same thing, we're bringing the ground to the wrist, and usually people tend to do better on it. And I don't care if the hands are going to the front or out to the sides, but I'm a fan of it. And if they can't do that, then I usually just put in med ball slams.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about med ball slams many times before this. I'm just a huge fan of them. If you said, what's outside the farmer's carry, what's a good core exercise? But med ball slams, I like them a lot.
Yep.
What's great for upper body explosiveness? Med ball slams. What's good for just overall explosiveness? Med ball slams.
Med balls are amazing for upper body explosive.
Absolutely. You know, and they've shown even with baseball pitchers. So you can increase the velocity of their pitch just by doing med ball slams. You know, not even a rotation throw.
Right.
So I'm sure there is research to prove that those are going to be beneficial too because it's more functional. But too many benefits to that. And granted, you know, they're coming up on their toes and slamming down. So, yes, they're not as stable. But I just think a lot of people really enjoy them just because they get to take some anger out on the ball. So, good stress reliever there. Now, let's say we advance through. So, someone's able to do a speed squat, speed deadlift, speed push-up, med ball slam. What are some other variations that you could potentially see the aging athlete do that are safe, but they can also challenge themselves?
So things like, are you thinking things like resisted, like band resisted,
whatever comes to mind? There's no right or wrong.
So, I mean, you said coming up onto the toes. So instead of actually leaving the floor, you just come up onto the toes, you explode through there. You could do, if you had the space, you could do like upward throws with the med ball. You could squat down and try and throw the ball essentially as high as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You could do things like push presses. So you're holding a weight in one or two hands, whatever, and then you have to create explosive force in order to press the weights upwards. Things along those lines. Something where you have to maybe not leave the ground, but express power against some sort of resistance.
Yeah. And kind of push press is where I was going with that next. So I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's an undervalued exercise. People don't understand that really the legs generate all the power and the shoulders catch you. That's really the big thing we need to remember. So dumbbells, I think, are a safer option. Barbells, the problem is with a barbell, once your hands are on the bar, it's a fixed bar path. So especially if someone has any overhead issues, I always find that the dumbbell's safer just because we can keep more of a neutral grip. And you can do that with one arm or you can do it with two. But the thing to remember, and probably what we'll do Adam. I'll find some YouTube videos, and we can put some links at the bottom just cool. in case people want to try to integrate these. You're not pushing with your arms. The push comes from the legs, and all you're doing is really just catching the dumbbell at the top. So it'll make more sense once we put that one in there. But I think that one's a great exercise for anyone to do. Another one that I think is relatively user-friendly, if done correctly, is just a broad jump.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another safe one that people can do. And I like it because you have a symmetrical stance, feet are side by side, you're really just rocking forward, you push yourself off, and you land. Now, the big thing is with that is we have to make sure that they're landing appropriately, because the biggest mistake that I'll see most people make is they want to land on their toes like a vertical jump,
mm-hmm.
where you have to roll through from heel to toe, hoping that your heel doesn't lift back off. So I think that's another very favorable exercise. I've also gone as far, so I know some aging athletes that like bench pressing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very similar to the squat and the deadlift, we can change the bench into a speed bench. Same thing, just using, 40 to 50%, and you're trying to basically push the weight into the ceiling as fast as you can. So I think these are all very user-friendly exercises, but then where do we go next? Well, now we need to get a little bit more challenging, because what we also do know about these jumping activities is that they're very good for bone regrowth, especially for those with osteoporosis. Now, we also have to make sure that someone has good balance and stability before we start challenging them a lot more. But Adam, are there any asymmetrical jumping exercises that we can start challenging people with?
Going forward and backward or up or?
Yeah, going up.
I mean, simple things like starting with like ankle jumps, pogos, whatever you want to call it. That's what I always call them, pogo jumps. Like like invisible jump rope, essentially.
Yep.
You're just flicking the ground away with your toes.
I'll usually progress that into alternating lunge jumps.
Okay, yep. I wasn't sure if you were going quite that far yet or not. But yeah,
yep.
Alternating lunge jumps are great. They burn the shit out of your quads.
Oh,
they're really
awful.
Good for you. But
yeah, really good. Well, we've talked about the importance of lunging before, because
mm-hmm.
it helps us get on and off the ground. And that's the important part. And then we can express power with that. So I'll usually teach people how to do one leg at a time. Go nice and slow. Don't go right into your next jump. But the goal is you have to get it vertical enough to switch your legs midair. And then you better hope that your legs get back underneath you so that you can absorb the shock as you hit the ground. Little more challenging in the scheme of things, because now we're in that asymmetrical stance, but still relatively safe. I still think that's a good one for a lot of individuals. Now, where it starts to get dicey for people is kind of side to side.
Mm-hmm.
That frontal plane, that's where we tend to lose a lot of our balance. What are your thoughts on skaters?
Skaters in terms of
side-to-side jumping.
Like, people call these so many different things. I just want to make sure I'm talking about the same thing. So you mean
there's skater squats.
Right. So you just mean skaters, hide and jumps, whatever. Okay, yeah. So I like them because I think they can be very easily controlled. You can either, pick the back foot up and you get low and you load up as much as you can so that you're trying to jump as far to the other side and stick it on one leg as you can. Or if somebody can't quite create that power or has pain on the landing, you can do the same thing, but the other foot can come down to give you some extra balance. Or you can shorten up the distance, or you can make it, quick contact. Your foot hits the ground and you're just trying to get back to the other side as quick as you can. I like them. I think that the technique part is, they're harder to learn to do correctly, or in quotes correctly, but they're hard to develop a single type, because people that don't have the ability to get low are going to keep it super shallow, and it's just going to kind of turn into a back and forth ankle jump.
Yeah.
Whereas, and then people that are all about, I don't want to say all about HIIT exercise, like they don't know what they're doing, but they think in terms of getting as many reps in as quick as possible.
Oh, and then it's a rebound exercise.
Right, exactly. They're not necessarily going to get low, load up, and try and get as far as they can. They're just trying to get back and forth as quickly as possible. But as an exercise, I personally really like them.
Yeah. I think it's great for knee stability. I think it's great for hip strengthening. But again, I usually start people off, jump to the side, pick a distance. I don't care how far. Just make sure you can control it. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about speed. I'm not worried about distance. Just land on that leg, but control it. Okay, now try it back to the other side. And then I start adding speed or distance, but I usually don't change both variables at once. The big thing to remember is that for a lot of aging athletes, usually the frontal plane is not trained.
Right.
I mean, that's the unfortunate reality to it. So I think adding that in can also create a lot more balance and stability, especially in single limb stance. But again, it's higher on the challenging list because of the technical aspects of it. And we also have to watch out for the compensation patterns that people typically take. The one that I appreciate is usually where they'll land and all of a sudden their whole body will turn in the opposite direction. And they're like, oh, that was so good. And I was like, well, it wasn't bad, but we got to clean that up. And that just means that usually it's core control, so we can challenge that pretty quickly. Now, another machine that I think is great for people to use for power is the ski erg.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use this a lot for people that maybe they don't want to jump, maybe they're apprehensive with jumping, and I'm assuming that their shoulders are fine at this point. But I also like to teach it for people with low back pain. Which technique do you prefer people use when they're on the ski erg? Because there's usually more of a hip hinge pattern and there's more of a squat pattern.
I've always tend to go more of the hip hinge pattern. Or teach more of the hip hinge pattern. When I do it, if I'm really going for like maximal speed, I'm probably a little bit of both, but typically we teach it as a hinge pattern more so than a squat pattern.
Yeah, and I've found for a lot of people, just teaching them to sit their hips back,
mm-hmm.
one, it doesn't fry their arms as much. They don't feel like limp noodles. But instantly their power goes up. Now, you can't keep up that power for 7 minutes. I mean, we're talking like 30 to 60 seconds. So we're trying to pull down on the rope as hard as we can. But that's another great exercise that I'll tend to teach people. There's just too many benefits to it. Plus, if they, let's say they're rehabbing their knee and we can't do any jumping, I'll still put them on the ski erg. I have no problem doing that because, as we know, hip hinge patterns are relatively safe and we can do a Romanian deadlift or whatever the hell they call it these days, just because the feet are going to be fixed to the ground. Are there any exercises that you like to give that you tend to see are kind of outside of traditional power exercises? And just so everyone knows, I'm putting them on the spot. We didn't review this ahead of time, so these are real time questions, and he's pondering.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it could be outside of the norm, and the fact that I usually keep my goal is more maximal power when I work with people. I don't even know if that's considered outside the norm, but like, I don't give people a set of 15 squat jumps.
Yeah, no.
I give people a set of 5 squat jumps, and I tell them to jump up as high as you possibly can on all 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have them do kettlebell swings for 2 minutes. I have them do kettlebell swings for 5 reps, and I want you to try and throw that kettlebell as far as you can on each, you know,
yep.
what I mean, each time. I'm trying to think if there's anything I really give outside the norm. Not really. Assuming that none of the examples I already gave were outside of the norm, but...
No, I'd say they're again, they follow the patterns that we're looking at. But I like how you picked a couple exercises that you just talked about, because you can use those both for endurance, or you could use them for power. Maybe not so much squat jumps, but the kettlebell swing, that's a very easy exercise to say, okay, we are going to go for a minute, we need to kind of build your capacity. But the size of the kettlebell is going to be greatly different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the intensity of the exercise, probably done at 85% compared to 99 or 100. So I do like picking exercises that we can live at both ends of the spectrum. So, and that's where things like the speed bench come in, because it's a very easy exercise. Okay, one day I can do a bench press maximal strength. Next time we can come in, we can focus on power. Next time we come in, we can focus on endurance. We've covered all of the spectrums, essentially, with minor nuances here and there, but we're practicing the same movement pattern, you know. And I know the bench press sometimes is not considered functional, but whatever, it's still an exercise that we deal with. Same thing with squats. On day one, I could give max squats for strength, and then we can do power on day two, and then we can do endurance on day three, and that could be a front squat compared to a back squat. So you kind of know my philosophy, and hopefully those of you who have been listening for a while. I like exercises that can be easily progressed or more challenging, and then exercises that can really be broken down into its simplest form. And power training is really no different. Because if we get to a speed squat and we find that someone really has a hard time, then I can just, okay, now we're just going to do a box squat. Now just stand up as quick as you can. And then we know that the foundation of everything is going to be strength. So if someone really can't do power, then I'm just going to build up their strength for another 4 weeks to see if we can start to move them a little bit faster. Is there ever a time where you say, okay, power training and explosive training is not right for this individual?
If it's somebody that doesn't have, the only times I really do it is somebody that's either really weak, like you mentioned, or, you know, like...
deconditioned.
Right. Yes, yeah, good point. So somebody who's really deconditioned and really hasn't done much of it in a while or maybe at all. Or somebody that just doesn't have control over their body mechanics. They just don't, they have that, you know, this is usually the person that will tell you, in quotes, I'm super uncoordinated. Yeah. You know, and
I'll say the person that's also hypermobile. They have super flexible joints.
Yeah, it was funny because when we were talking about the push-ups, the only thing that I like was the only thing that I don't necessarily, that I worry about sometimes. It's not even like a big worry because the percentage of people that this would be a problem with is really small. Is like people that are going to shoot lock out their elbows and then go past. Right, they go past so 180 degrees.
The camel elbow, as
right,
I call it.
Right. But yes, so people that either don't have the coordination to do it without hurting themselves, or if they're in a group, other people around them.
Mm-hmm.
People that are super deconditioned, or yeah, people that are hypermobile and can't control it, mm-hmm. or you know don't have the strength yet to keep it within a certain range.
Sure. So now, what if someone came up to you and said, you know, I'm 75, so I shouldn't jump. What would your response to them be?
Why?
Exactly. Because age itself is, we should not be basing our training off of one's age only. Really, it should be based off of their ability. Because there are plenty of 75-year-olds that are jumping, or mm-hmm. should be jumping. You know, just like if someone were 80. Okay, you're 80. But show me what you can do. Whereas we could have a 50-year-old that had, I don't know, pick any knee injury.
Right.
You know, they've just been super apprehensive. It's like, all right, I'm not going to jump them only for the fact that they're apprehensive. I need to make sure they can squat first and squat well, and then can we load strength on it before I can realistically ask them to move it quickly. It's just funny, though, with kids. Or let me back that up. One of the things that pisses me off about strength and conditioning or when these coaches come out and say, you should be able to bench this much, you should be able to squat this much, you know, my athletes do this. Well, good for fucking you. But I read one time that said, if you can't squat 2 times your body weight, you shouldn't be jumping.
Yeah, I've seen that before. And I've actually talked about that before.
Yeah. So are you going to go to the local playground and tell those kids to squat 2 times their body weight before they jump off the playground?
No, I can't squat 2 times my body weight.
No. not on my best day.
No.
I have no
interest in being able to squat 2 times my body weight, if I'm being completely honest.
No, absolutely not. You know, and my...
I mean, cool if you can. I just don't... It's not a...
That's such a small percentage of people in the scheme of things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they said you should be able to squat your body weight... All right,
okay.
That's more realistic.
Yeah.
But 2 times? So you're telling me I got to squat almost 400 pounds just to do a box jump?
Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Like, that's stupid. There's no research to prove that. However, my point being, kids jump immediately. You know, they go through their neural development... neurodevelopmental stages, and they start jumping. Would you imagine that?
It's, yeah.
And
it's,
they play.
It's funny to me, like, and maybe this happens to you more. This happened, has started to happen to me more so. Maybe it's just because I'm, just because all the people who know me, like, oh, he's not really about to say it because he's getting older. But I just mean, like, because I've seen more. Do you still have, like, when RJ, or when you're, sorry, when your son's going to, like, jump off of something or whatever, and you're looking, and you're like, wow, that's high. Do you still have that moment of, like when they jump off it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, I see that with, I have that with kids where I'm like, they're not going to jump off that, are they? They're not going to jump off that. Please don't jump off that. And then they do it, and they're just like, whoop, gone. Well,
that's your,
running off.
That's the rational part of your brain saying, that's high. I would hurt myself if I jumped off of that.
Right, but, like, if you took that and you applied it to, like, again, that you need to be able to squat double your body weight, then theoretically every kid that jumps off of, you know, a 3-foot ledge is breaking every bone in their lower body as soon as they contact the ground.
Yeah.
And they don't.
It just doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, it's rare we'll see, like, a green stick fracture or something like that.
Well, it certainly happens, but
it's so rare.
Right.
But again, you know, we tend to play sports and are active through our teenage years and even 20s for the most part. You know, you even got to think, you know, you still play soccer, mm-hmm. you know, and you're in your 30s. So, you know, you're still at a prime time where playing soccer, doing the power training like you do, keeping up with your strength, you're less likely to tear anything into your 40s compared to the person who doesn't do anything and then says, oh, I'm going to play men's pickup.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well, give it a couple months and you're either going to have a tendonitis, you're going to have a tendinopathy, you're going to have some type of a strain or a rupture just because you didn't want to work on it. You know, and it's still, it amazes me that people don't work out. You know, and maybe I shouldn't necessarily say that. Because I know plenty of people that don't like working out, but they're active.
Right.
But there are some people that it amazes me that they're not active. And that is awful because there's a lot of modifiable risk factors that we can change to increase our health and fitness status. You know, and really we're talking about one thing today, and that's just jumping. But now knowing how important power and explosiveness is, hopefully people will think about lifting differently. Oh, I don't feel like lifting heavy in the gym today. Oh, I can cut the weight in half and just lift it fast.
Right.
That's still a quality workout. That's a completely different stimulus than if you tried to lift something heavy. You know, then we also have to look into, too, you know, and I'd have to look more into the research, but one of the things that they do promote is the growth hormone release when you do power and explosive exercises, just like maximal strength exercises. So you're telling me that I can get the same type of hormonal response by cutting my weight in half, doing less repetitions, but just moving the weight quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. Like,
well, it's like it, when we talk about power and, like, aging and keeping power, you keep power, but it's relative.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like if you don't just lose it entirely. I mean, you know, there are senior divisions in, I don't know what the ages are, but I know that there are older, like the Tour de France, well, maybe not the Tour de France, but like bike racing and biking.
There's probably still a master's division.
Masters, that's the word, not senior, masters. But like, you know, all of these, it's not like those people have lost all their power. It's just less than the, it's just, so like the whole, like if you're talking about sprinting, for example, and let's just use 10 second 100 meter dash. I know that that's like the world record, but for what I'm about to say, it'll be easy numbers. Let's say that the top person in age 20 to 30 can run it in 10 seconds. Okay, so then you lose 10% each decade just for easy numbers. So now everyone, let's say everyone has the potential to run it in 10 seconds in that age range. Okay, so you go 10 years, 1%. So now, relatively speaking, those people should be able to run it in about 11 or 12 seconds. Another 10%, 12 or 13 seconds. It like, but you still can't sprint without power.
Mm.
Just how much power you create decreases.
Correct.
I mean, you don't, that same example you made with the bike, right? You still need to express power to go uphill, you don't just lose all of it, and so then you wouldn't be able to go up certain mm-hmm. steep hills. Just how fast you can produce it decreases. You're still producing it. It's correct. Just less. There's no point where your ability to create power completely disappears unless you let it completely disappear.
Yeah, I think that's important to point out, because a lot of people, oh, I just can't do it. No, you can. There's never a time that you can't do it. You can, but what's the given ability right now to do it? You know, if you haven't done it in 40 years, well, it's not going to come back naturally. You know, you got to work your way into it. But I think that's probably true for everything that we talk about losing as we age. You know, I think it's the ability is still there. It's just whether we actually choose to do it or not. And I think oftentimes, you know, when we think about orthopedics, they spend a large part of their time telling people, don't do this, don't do that, don't squat past this, this is dangerous. So now it basically becomes a red light, green light system for a lot of people where, I'm going to get hurt, I can't do this. Did you even try? Well, no. Well, how do you know? And that for me is probably that's the saddest part, because a lot of these people probably can push themselves a lot harder, but they've been led to believe that they're these fragile beings that are going to spontaneously combust. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Our species wouldn't have made it this long if that were the case.
I mean, in a lot of the stuff, if you continue to train and you pay attention to it, I'm not saying if you don't sprint for 20 years and then you decide, like the example you gave, and then you decide you're going to go out and run a quick 100-meter dash just for fun. Like, not that example, but I'm saying if you continue to work on it over time in some fashion, most of it is self-limiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You go to swing a kettlebell that you don't have the power to swing, and maybe the swing isn't the best example. Let's go, but most people know what a swing is. In a power clean, it's simple. You can't clean it. It's not, you just, the weight doesn't get there and you drop it.
You drop it.
Right, like so, but not everybody's done a power clean. So with a kettlebell swing, if you have a kettlebell that's a little bit too much for you to swing, you can't swing it. Like the bell doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, maybe the risk is a little bit greater than something like a power clean, because again, power clean, you drop the bar,
yeah.
You lose the bar. But same idea. Like it's self-limiting. If you go out and you sprint, and you've been doing stuff to allow you to sprint, you can still sprint. It's just like when your body can't go past a certain speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only time that you have injuries, it's not like you sprint for 30 years and then one day, you know, and one day you're in perfect health and your tendon just ruptures because you turned 45. No, your tendon ruptures because you took 3 weeks off and you're 45, and you didn't warm up, you didn't do anything, you just went out and decided to run. You know what I mean? Like and even the person that's been running for that long, it's probably still not going to happen to them even after 3 weeks. But my point is that all of this stuff is self-limiting unless you limit it.
Well, and that's, a lot of people are their own barriers to success.
Right.
So, but that's why it's important, like the coaches here do a very good job at pushing people or suggesting that they should try even harder. My philosophy with people is we don't know what the body's capable of until we go and do it. And I think a lot of people appreciate that, because it's almost like I'm giving them permission to go try something that's a little bit harder. Now, we're not talking about being crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's about adding in something that's controlled and relatively safe for us, just to say, hey, I did it. I didn't break anything. I can do a little bit more. You know, but that's no different if someone's never worked out before and wants to work out. Well, you don't know whether you can do it or not until you try.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you work out, you're going to be sore as shit. But does that deter us from doing it? No, because it's very rare nowadays that I get sore like I did when I was a beginning lifter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can probably remember the first like heavy leg press, and then all of a sudden you can't get off the toilet for 3 or 4 days.
In high school, I remember the first time that I just like kept adding weight on and adding weight on and adding weight on and adding weight on to the leg press. I don't even remember what I got up to, something close to 1,000, maybe a little over, but I remember the next day, like every third or fourth step, at school, like walking to classes, my leg would just collapse. Like, yep. I'd have to catch myself.
The whole leg just starts shaking.
Yeah. Yep.
You have to lower yourself down to the toilet and pull yourself back up. So we're not trying to make it like that.
No.
So if
not
you
at
do
all.
It well controlled, you're not going to have the aches and pains of the jumping. Jumping is very, very safe for us. But again, there are other options that we can do to still build that power and speed and explosiveness, which is an essential part of what we need to be able to do with functional activities. It's just something that gets lost over time. And I feel this is due to the fact that people get rid of things because they feel like they have to because they're getting old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a learned behavior. So not that I'm asking everyone to go out and really exceed their ability because I said so, but no, in a controlled manner, we should continually push ourselves to create an adaptation that allows me to be more explosive or powerful or strong or I have better balance. But not training those things will never get you there. And then we have the sarcopenias of the world. Then we have the osteoporosis of the world. Let's not forget, then cardiac disease is going to go up. Then potentially diabetes risk goes up and pulmonary disease. And so even though we're only talking about it from a fitness standpoint, we also have to think about all the other benefits that come with exercise, fitness, nutrition, all rolled into one package. And at the end of the day, it really is it's a lifestyle. So it's not like you can just do it for 3 months and then it takes care of everything. It's living it and breathing it and just doing it all the time.
Yep.
Any points that you were hoping that we'd touch upon, Adam, that we didn't get to?
No, I feel like we hit on everything pretty well.
I believe so too. So you guys know the drill. We've come to the end again. I'm going to find some YouTube videos of the exercises that we talked about, and Adam's going to post them at the bottom. The emails are there. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas for future podcasts, reach out, because as always, you know, this podcast is nothing without you guys. And we appreciate you listening. And until next time, take care.
Later, guys.